The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors right here on WCBM 680. Here's what the deal is today. The show today, October 8th, is pre-recorded. We've got guests from beginning to end, and we're just going to tell you that we're hopeful, as of today, where we're pre-recording the show, that the folks at CVA are going to get back to us and support our muzzle loader giveaway. I'm confident that they are, but I haven't really heard from them yet. So we're going to give away a muzzle loader at the end of November, end of October, one way or the other. Maybe it's the only one, but you can win it by simply emailing me today. You got to email me today, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, name and phone number, put muzzleloader contest on your subject line to your email, and we'll get you in the contest because we're not taking any calls for it. The producer's having enough trouble running the board and getting everything lined up. So, you know, even without me here, I know I said it. There, I meant it. So, sorry. So anyway, just email me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, muzzleloader contest, name and phone number, and you'll be in the drawing for the end of the month. Even if I got to buy the muzzleloader, I'm going to give away a CVA muzzleloader one way or the other. How's that sound to you? We've done it every fall for the last 10 years. We'll do it anyway. We'll do it again. All right. Well, we're going to change tracks. We talked about firearm suppressors last hour. We talked with Bill Miles about the Hunting Summit meeting and some of the issues that came up there briefly. I mean, it was a four-hour meeting, so we summarized it in about 15 minutes, which was pretty amazing. But right now, we're going to switch tracks, and we're going to go to one of my favorite places on Earth, and that's Deep Creek Lake. We're going to talk with fisheries biologist Matt Sell. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great today, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think you've probably been on the show three or four times now.
I believe it's been.
Yeah, and you've been on board at the fishing challenge finale. The last two, anyway. The last two, there actually were in existence since there wasn't one this year. And you do a great job with presenting the youth part of the program and helping out with that. So we've gotten to fish a little bit together the last couple of years, and we know that your interests are northern pike up there in beautiful Deep Creek Lake, even though your real job is to take care of what?
Brook trout.
Brook trout.
Yeah.
How are we doing on the brook trout?
Brook trout are doing great, Alan. We just here in the last week or two finished up our sampling for the year, and the numbers across the board look really, really good. We had a great year class. Since we changed the regulations in the Upper Savage River, it's one of the better year classes we've actually had. And on top of that, statewide, it seems like the year classes are really, really good across the board, not just in the Savage River, but elsewhere as well. So
beautiful.
Yep.
Beautiful.
And we're also seeing a number of large fish, too. We got fish up to 13 inches in our sample this year, so it's always fun to get your hands on big fish like that.
That is a big fish. I think my biggest brook trout was 10 and a half inches or something like that from up in the neighboring county of Somerset many, many moons ago. But you just said the Savage. There are other places there to fish for brook trout, right?
Yeah, there's a number of places. Western Maryland is, in Garrett County specifically, has the highest number of brook trout streams for folks to get out there and chase after them. The Savage River State Forest has a lot of public access.
Right.
And a lot of the streams in Savage River actually still have brook trout in them. But when you get down into Potomac State Forest and all down along the North Branch of Potomac, a lot of the tributaries have brook trout there. Parts of Savage State Forest in the headwaters of the Cassman Drainage still have brook trout.
Mm-hmm.
And then scattered around through Allegheny County, some of the trips to Georges Creek and some trips to Jennings Run. They still have good numbers of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a little gap from there down to about the Catoctins.
Right.
And then some of the federal and state lands in around the Catoctin Mountains have some brookies. And then, again, another small gap until you get down into, like, the Gunpowder River watershed and areas like that where we have a few small populations still hanging on despite
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm. And these fish, have they ever been supplemented? I mean, have you stocked brook trout to produce brook trout, or are these primarily the what we call native fish, or call native fish?
These are all native fish.
Okay.
Years and years and years ago, even prior to you catching that 10.5-incher in Somerset County.
That may have been 40 some years ago, buddy. So don't worry about that.
It probably before then. There were brook trout that were stocked, but at this point, it's kind of our thing that we don't stock brook trout anywhere in the state of Maryland, and the fish that we have are wild fish and native fish.
Yes.
They're the only native salmonid that we have here in Maryland.
Yep. And they are, and is it still like it was back in the wilds of Pennsylvania? Now, I have fished for them recently, and I'll tell you, one of the coolest places I ever fished was in, where did we go? 2009 was on a bear hunt up in New Brunswick,
mm-hmm.
and fished one of the beaver ponds up there for brook trout. But is it still in your area? Is it still sneak up on them and don't make any noise along the stream and kind of flip your little fly out there? You know, on 15 feet of line, or can you actually stand in a river somewhere and cast for them?
Now, you want to be somewhat sneaky, remembering that these are wild fish. They were born and raised in the stream, and their entire life has been survival and reproduction.
Right.
And part of their survival instinct is any overhead-type predators. So when you go walking right up next to the stream, particularly if the water's low and clear, and they see you, they'll dart up into the pool, and once one spooks, generally it scares the rest of the fish in that pool, and you might as well just move on. It's very difficult to catch them at that point. So generally, my recommendations to folks is always fish in an upstream direction.
Yep.
And wear some drab-colored clothing. Try to, you don't necessarily need camouflage, but wear greens and browns and tans and things that aren't
mm-hmm.
going to stand out. It's going to allow you to get closer, and I'm not a good caster, particularly with a fly rod in my hands.
Right.
So it's always my goal to get as close as humanly possible to the fish so that I have as little opportunity to screw up the cast as what I can. So it helps to blend in with your surroundings
Familiar. It's not Hickory Shad fishing on Deer Creek, I can tell you that.
Absolutely not. Quite a bit different.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a little different. And, of course, fly rod is the preferred method, but I'm sure there are a lot of guys out there you'd like to use their ultralight spinning rod and little tiny baits like that, and live bait if you're going to keep some, but who wants to, you know?
It'd
be eating smelt.
Yeah, I am one of those folks who I don't have to catch a fish a certain way.
Right.
I just like to catch a fish.
Yeah, exactly.
And whatever the weather conditions or the whatever else may be affecting it calls for a certain tool, I'll use a certain tool. And if that's a spinning rod or a fly rod or whatever the case may be, I'm going to use what I need to get some fish in my hands.
Yeah, so. I know you don't use 50-pound braid on them like you do for the northern pike, though. That's probably not.
No, it's typically a bit lighter than that.
I would think so, yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Matt, we talked about brook trout. Remind me again, which trout species spawn in the spring and which ones spawn in the fall?
Primarily, brook trout and brown trout are fall spawners.
Okay.
Rainbow trout, using the word normal loosely, normal rainbow trout will spawn in the spring.
Okay.
Typically. However, there are certain strains of rainbow trout that have been conditioned over time to spawn in the fall.
Okay, so the spawning season for most of the salmonoids is most of the trout species is fall time.
Yeah. Yep. Fall's the time for it.
Okay.
Yeah, we're getting real close right now. Probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks, as these water temperatures continue to fall, the brook trout are going to start moving towards their spawning reds. And
is it easier to catch them or harder to catch them on the reds?
And actively spawning, it's virtually, I shouldn't say it's virtually impossible. It's more difficult because they have something else on their mind.
Yeah, they're breeding and protecting the fry and the eggs and all that stuff. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, they get to do that once a year, so yeah. They're a little preoccupied for at least a few days out of the year there.
Yeah, I get it.
Yep, but outside of that window, and post-spawn, particularly post-spawn, the females go through a lot, and they need to put a lot of weight back on in preparation for wintertime and the hardships of winter and slower metabolisms and all.
Right.
So oftentimes post-spawn, they'll be in a funk for a few days, if you will.
Yep.
And then they'll really start to put the feed bag on, and again, trying to put some body weight back on leading up to winter.
So you're thinking the bite is usually first part of November, something like that, for that, if you want to fish that fishery.
That's it. I like either early October if the flows are better than what they are now,
right?
Pre-spawn, or I'll wait. And some of the better fishing I have is actually wintertime fishing, November into December.
Right.
Yep.
So what do you do? Do you hunt the rut with your bow, or do you go brook trout fishing? Let's see. Rut, brook trout. 3-hour ride to Western Maryland or hour and a half to the Eastern Shore. Well, I'll tell you, that's a very difficult decision for me.
It's not an easy one, and when you throw things in like old 40-inch northern pike, it makes the decision even more difficult. I need more hours in the day, I can promise you.
And then don't forget, you got duck season right around the corner too. So
yeah,
that's all. Such choices we have,
Yep, we definitely need more hours.
Exactly.
No doubt about it.
Exactly. Any other trout fishing trips tips for the fall for the listeners? We're going to probably finish this segment out with trout fishing since that's your area. Are there any threats up there to the wild native brook trout that we're trying to bring back in Maryland? Brought back, but you know what I'm saying. Make it just a spectacular place. Are there any threats up there? Are there any public land areas that are posing problems? Are there, snowmobilers? We don't have any snow anymore. I mean, is there anything up there that's threatening any of the spawning grounds or anything like that?
At this point, a lot of it depends on where you're at. There's the typical threats to brook trout, and they're highly varied. Logging practices, agricultural practices, things like that introduce a lot of sediment to the water.
Thank God there's no logging or farming in Garrett County.
Yeah, how about it? It done properly, it can be done well and not have minimal impact to the streams themselves. But anything that introduces excess sediment, I can smother the eggs in the reds, and those little eggs and embryos, as they're developing, need to be able to breathe.
Right.
And if you smother them with too much sediment and things, you can have failed reproduction that way.
Right.
On top of that, your typical water quality issues. There's, a legacy of coal mining out here in Western Maryland.
Sure.
Specifically. And where you have acid mine drainage and things, there's always the potential for troubles. But we've had a great relationship with some other state agencies and conservation groups, and we've been able to combat some of that in creative ways, like lime dosers and things like that, to help to neutralize the pH and bring water quality back to where it needs to be.
Yep, just dump the dump truckload of Tums in the headwaters and let it run downstream and clean everything up that's been acidified, I guess.
That's it. And then there's also, they have leach beds where it's a passive system,
right,
where the water flows into the leach bed and it flows through calcium carbonate in the rocks, typically limestone,
right,
and it helps to neutralize that acid, and then it basically comes out the other end with a much higher pH than it did.
Mm-hmm.
On top of all that, there's the temperature is one of the big things that really is probably driving brook trout distribution this day and age.
Temperature.
Yep. Yeah, and in increased temperature, particularly in central Maryland, it, you know, is...
Well, we used to hear a lot about acid rain. I mean, that was a big thing, and it was a very real threat at one point. Do we hear anything about acid rain anymore?
Not as much. The Clean Air Act has done a lot towards helping to fix that problem.
Right.
And the acid rain isn't as much of an issue here. However, if you go south into, like, Great Smoky Mountain National Park in parts southern parts of the Brook Trout's range, there are still places that have had, in recent years, in the last decade, very, very low pH values coming out of some streams because of acid rain and acid deposition. Values as low as, you know, 4 on the pH scale.
God, wow, so, that's bad.
Yeah, pretty nasty stuff. But there have been significant strides made in working to clean that up.
One-word answer. Whirling disease still an issue in Western Maryland?
Maybe.
Okay, good answer. Good answer. All right, buddy, listen, we're going to take a short break here. I got to tell the folks about a couple of our sponsors, and we'll get right back to you. So stay there, okay? You'll hear the phone click after this segment, and we'll come right back to you. Hey, it's the annual Sportsman's Auction today in Hagerstown. Stauffer's Auction Company is having this great Sportsman's Auction. I've been online, and there's a lot of guns, and I'm sure there's going to be firearms and hunting supplies and bows and fishing gear and all that stuff. If you want to see what's going on at Stauffer's Auction, at the Sportsman's Auction today, Stauffer's Auction Co. or stauffersauctioncompany.com, Stauffers auctionco.com. It's a 2140 Leadersburg Pike in Hagerstown. Starts at 10 o'clock. Go on up and get yourself a good deal on a firearm. Come back and tell me what you bought. StauffersAuctionCo.com. Now, Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, just in time for the waterfowl season. I told you about a couple of shotguns last hour. I'm going to tell you about two more. First one I'm going to tell you about is the Maxxis, the autoloader shotgun with waterfowl hunting perfection. 3 and 3.5 inch chamber models available. It's a new power drive gas system that reduces recoil. Comes in Mossy Oak camo and that DuraTouch armor coating. You'll like it. Go pick one up, put it up to your shoulder, see how you like the swing on that thing. The Maxxis from Browning. And then my favorite, the A5, the most reliable, fastest cycling, best balanced, softest shooting recoil operated auto loader on the planet. Mossy Oak Shadow Grass Blades, DuraTouch Camo, Fiber Optic Front Sight, the Humpback Receiver, ergonomically balanced. It's the recoil-operated kinematic drive system on the A5 Auto Loader Shotgun. 100,000-round or 5-year guarantee, all at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway, exit number 9. Phone number, 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. We'll be right back after this. Attention, gun owners, hunters, and shooters. Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown, Maryland is your one-stop gun shop for sales, service, and training. Large selection of new and used guns, hafersguns.com. Large selection of ammo and reloading, hafersguns.com. Repairs, parts, custom gunsmithing, hafersguns.com. Class 3 firearms, hafersguns.com. Check out their extensive 1,600-square-foot showroom. Easy access from Interstates 81 and 70. Hafer's Gunsmithing on the web at hafersguns.com or on Facebook at Hafer's Gunsmithing, 240-347-4906. Above precision, beyond accurate. And while you're at Hafer's Gunsmithing, see a redneck blind on display. Redneck blinds are the best deer blinds on the planet. Do you need a blind for the field edge, deep in the woods, or on the marsh? Choose Redneck Blinds. They're built to last. Redneck's fiberglass hunting blinds, new soft side hunting blind, and the hay bale blinds provide great visibility and shot angles for your bow, gun, and crossbow hunting. Stephen House is your Maryland Redneck Blinds dealer. Check the Redneck Blind website, then call Stephen at 301-331-2500.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose a Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Linex, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199.
See that cute little dog in the pet store window? Chances are it came from a puppy mill, a breeding facility that forces caged, neglected, and often sick dogs to churn out puppy after puppy to be sold for profit. Meanwhile, millions of wonderful, healthy pets end up in animal shelters. This leads to the killing of more than 9,000 by the end of today. But with one simple choice, you can help. Just by deciding to adopt instead of purchase your next pet. Animal shelters are full of amazing pets looking for a home. When you adopt your new best friend, not only are you saving a life, you're taking a stand against puppy mills. When your friends see the smart choice and impact you've made, they adopt their next pet and share with five of their friends, who share with five more. Before long, thousands get involved. Pet stores stop selling dogs from puppy mills, and even more lives are saved. And with your help, we can save them all. Visit bestfriends.org/puppymills to learn more.
Talk Radio 680 WCPN.
Your heart gets to thumping, your knees get to knocking, and your mind starts racing. It's a feeling like you never felt before. Have you coming back for more? Buck Fever, gonna get you, boy. Buck Fever.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back today. We're talking with Matt Sell, a fisheries biologist specializing in brook trout in Garrett County, with the headquarters of all the brook trout here in Maryland, just about. But Matt, you live 10 minutes from Deep Creek Lake, and I know you love to fish those big northern pike in the fall, but give our listeners an opportunity or an idea of what their opportunities are at Deep Creek now that the recreational boater traffic has died off and the water skiers have gone home and the water temperatures are starting to drop. And, you know, what are the general lake conditions, and then, you know, what can we expect to catch when we're up there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, at this point, definitely the traffic is dying down. And fall is an absolutely tremendous time to be on Deep Creek or any lake for that matter. Currently, because of the warm weather we've had and the dry conditions and all, the surface temperatures are still hovering a little bit above 70 from what I've been hearing from some folks.
Okay.
But as we continue to have these beautiful cool days like we're having today and the cold nights down into the 40s the last few nights, the surface water temperatures are going to start to fall on the lake. And what that does, without getting into the tall grass on it, is as the cold water on the surface, as it begins to cool, it begins to sink because cold water is heavier.
Right.
And around about mid-October, typically, we'll go through what's called turnover on the lake. Right. And that's where...
What's the scientific term?
Yeah, scientific term. Basically, the cold water at the surface sinks,
yep,
and kind of flips the cold water on the bottom back to the surface,
yep,
and it makes the whole lake the same temperature from top to bottom. And you usually know that happened because that cold water that's been at the bottom all summer, there hasn't been much in the way of oxygen generation, and things have been decomposing, and the lake will kind of get a rotten egg smell to it because you're smelling that methane
right
that's being circulated back. and it typically will throw fishing off for a little bit. The fish are getting used to the new temperature regime in the lake.
Yeah, well, there's a new thermocline, too, isn't there?
Well, the thermocline has disappeared, is what happened.
Oh, there is no layer of oxygen between the warm and the cold layer.
Correct. At that point, at post-turnover, it's homogeneous throughout. It's the oxygen is the same from top to bottom as well as the temperature.
Right.
And it'll remain that way until ice over in the winter, where it'll begin to stratify again, but it does it in an opposite fashion, where actually the warmest water in the lake will be right on the bottom instead of the top like it is in the summer.
Okay.
And that's why oftentimes when you're ice fishing, you want to be fishing very near the bottom when you're jigging for perch and walleyes and things, because water is the heaviest at about 39, 39 and a half degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
And that, in the wintertime, is the warmest water in the lake, and it's right at the very bottom. So that's why you want to focus your efforts through the ice, typically a little bit deeper like that.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay. So through the ice in the wintertime, you're fishing on the very bottom because that's where the best oxygen and best warmest water is.
Mm-hmm.
Fish being cold water species fish are cold water, cold-blooded. That's the word I'm trying to get out, cold-blooded creatures. And they're going to seek out the most moderate temperature they can.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. So here it is, October 8th, the date of this broadcast, and I want to come to Deep Creek Lake. Do I want to fish the new moon, the full moon, or just get there and start fishing somewhere?
Typically, when you're talking lunar tables, I like to focus effort around moonrise and moonset, or moonset, whichever the case may be. And there's generally an activity period around there where the fish will perk up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as you're getting into mid-October and these temperatures are falling, all the fish feel that in the lake. Your warm water, your cool water, and your cold water fish all feel it. And it's the best time of the year to fish because all of those fish know that winter is coming. And they're all putting the feed bag on big time in preparation for that winter season. And in particular, your spring spawning fish like your walleyes, your northern pike, those fish have to develop their eggs and their gametes over the winter time, leading up to ice out whenever they can go and spawn. So they really want to put as much weight on as they can so they have really good condition and they're really healthy going through the winter, and it helps them to better develop eggs as well as survive the winter well.
So. Okay, I got you. All right, let's talk a little bit about species and techniques. So I'm up there the 22nd of October.
Okay.
And I'm there for 3 days, 4 days, long weekend, somewhere in that two-thirds of the way through, or three-quarters of the way through the month. Okay. So what am I fishing for?
Whatever you want to catch, Alan.
Really?
It's kind of like in the
spring. You can catch almost anything up there.
Just about. It's a great time of year because everything is in preparation for winter, so that they're feeding typically aggressively and often, which is a great thing with any fish. But the smallmouth fishing can be tremendous. You can catch them using spinnerbaits and topwater on occasion. You know, early morning, late evening, you can get a topwater bite in the fall.
Even in that cold water, you can get a topwater bite.
In the cooler water, as it's into the 60s and even down into the 50s, you still can.
Sure.
But the colder it gets, typically switching to your standard tube jigs, hair jigs, things like that.
Sinkos and stuff like that.
That's it. Yeah. Focus on main lake points, and you're going to hear that theme coming through with a lot of fish species here in the fall. But main lake points near structure, near drop-offs to deeper water,
mm-hmm.
and fish the areas very thoroughly, particularly if you're choosing a slower technique like jigging.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to cover the area very thoroughly because the difference of 20 feet in location may mean the difference between catching 15, 20 fish a day and two or three.
You know, it's interesting. People think that, like in the spring, you've got to fish deep for these fish, you know, because they've been suspended all winter and, you know, they got to be on the bottom. They got to be down there somewhere. But you're telling me that's really not till ice fishing takes place. My question is it like in the spring where you want to fish the shallower waters because you still have plenty of sunshine, abundant sunshine, and fairly warm daytime temperatures until, well, up there. I mean, you get nighttime temperatures in the 40s and 30s in October, and, of course, colder as it goes. But, you know, do you want to fish in shallower areas where you've got some sun hitting the water and warming it up a little bit, or do you want to stay down on the bottom?
That's a very loaded question, and it gets back a lot to what you're going to target.
Okay.
Because the water temperature and the oxygen levels are now the same throughout the lake,
right?
At whatever depth, you could have walleyes on deep rock humps in 45 feet of water and sit there and jig walleyes off of that rock hump, just the same as you could throw a floating number 11 Rapala right at dusk on a 6 foot deep rock reef or a rock point and catch walleyes as well. They really could be anywhere. And that's why I say definitely use your graph, whether it's walleyes or smallmouth. Typically, use your graph in the fall, stick to your main lake points, and focus in areas where there's better structure, noticeable changes in habitat, whether it be a steep drop next to deep water or sunken rock piles, you know, brush piles, anything along those lines.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So what happens if I just want to catch some perch and eat them? I mean, walleyes are great, and you know, I love eating walleyes. I love catching walleyes. I love eating walleyes. But what about those big old slab bluegills and the nice yellow perch up there if I want to take a mess of fish?
I would say your best bet going into the fall is get on those main lake points again.
Right.
And back off to the point where you have these large weed beds, milfoil beds, and we have willow leaf pondweed, we have elodea, we have different weed beds on these main lake points in the lake. And these fish will, as the water's temperature's falling, those weed beds start to die back, but they're still there.
Right.
And where you can find those weed beds, I found that the yellow perch and the bluegills really like to hang and suspend just off the outside edge of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find a main lake point with a decent weed bed, get off the outside edge, fish a slip bobber with a little fathead minnow or a small shiner, or a silver buddy or a small spoon type lure and just vertical jig or cast and jig, you'll find some yellow perch and some big crappies, and occasionally you'll tag a few of those big bluegills too.
Well, you can anchor up and bounce your cast and retrieve your little twister tail and something like that too, I'm guessing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Got
yes,
it.
Sir.
Got it. All right. That's pretty cool. So you've given us a lot of tips here. I'm going to take a short break here, Matt, and we'll be back. We'll be back with you for the final segment. Is that okay?
Sounds great, Alan. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thank you. All right, folks. Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, is your full line Browning dealer. And for you rifle hunters, if you're headed out west, I'm going to recommend the top of the line right now, and that's the X-Bolt Hell's Canyon Speed Model. It comes in the Arid Urban Camouflage with a DuraTouch finish, composite stock, a Cerakote finished barrel, which is beautiful, kind of a bronze finish, fluted barrel, sporter barrel with a threaded muzzle brake, detachable rotary magazine, a short throw bolt, adjustable trigger bolt action, and it's got select calibers for not only things, anything from Maryland deer and Sitka deer, but all the way up to anything that inhabits the northern continent, North America here. If you're going elk hunting, if you're going pronghorn hunting, if you're going for caribou or whatever it might be, you might want to take a look at one of these new X-Bolt Hell's Canyon Speeds. It's a gorgeous gun. I highly recommend you take a look at that one. There's also the standard X-Bolt with the walnut finish and the blue stock. It's an excellent firearm, extremely accurate, all standard, all magnum, all short magnum calibers with adjustable feather trigger, detachable rotary magazine. You put one of these X-Bolts up to your shoulders and you're really going to like it. Now, if you're a bargain hunter, the A-Bolt 3, it's a Browning. It's a walnut stock Browning with a blued finish and a factory installed Nikon Buckmaster 4-12 by 40 BDC rifle scope right from the factory. It's a beautiful package gun. 243 7mm 08, 308 270 30-06 7mm Remington Magnum, 300 Win Mag, available in all those calibers. Stop by and see them at Clyde Sports Shop. And there's a value price on that package that I just told you about, the AB 300. Stop by Clyde's at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9, 410-242-6108. That's 242-6108. ClydeSports.com is the website. Now look, my buddy Denny Stauffer, he's having his annual sportsman auction today at 10 o'clock, 21-140 Leadersburg Pike in Hagerstown, Maryland, for your GPS. If you're going up there, starts at 10 o'clock. Lots of firearms, ammunition, hunting supplies, bows, fishing gear, clothing, all available. If you want to check out the firearms online, it's StauffersAuctionCo.com. www.StauffersAuctionCo.com for today's annual sportsman's auction. You'll be glad you did. We'll be right back after these messages. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Redneck Blinds are the best deer blinds on the planet. Do you need a blind for the field edge, deep in the woods, or on the marsh? Choose Redneck Blinds. They're built to last. Redneck's fiberglass hunting blinds, new soft side hunting blind, and the hay bale blinds provide great visibility and shot angles for your bow, gun, and crossbow hunting. Stephen House is your Maryland Redneck Blinds dealer. Check the Redneck Blinds website, then call Stephen at 301-331-2500. You can see a Redneck Blind on display at Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown. Gun owners, hunters, and shooters, Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown, Maryland is your one-stop gun shop for sales, service, and training. Large selection of new and used guns, hafersguns.com. Large selection of ammo and reloading, hafersguns.com. Repairs, parts, or custom gunsmithing, hafersguns.com. Class 3 firearms, hafersguns.com. Check out their extensive 1,600-square-foot showroom, easy access from Interstates 81 and 70. Hafer's Gunsmithing, on the web at hafersguns.com or on Facebook at Hafer's Gunsmithing, 240-347-4906, above precision, beyond accurate. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. You know Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linex bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
It it sits above the mantel on a couple rusty nails. And it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell. Granddaddy's gun, he bought it new out of the Sears and Roebuck.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Hey, Matt, are you with me?
Yes, sir.
Good. Hey, folks, we're with Matt Sell. We're pre-recording today's show, in case you hadn't figured that out. And we were talking about Deep Creek Lake. We're talking, first off, about the brook trout. Now we're talking about Deep Creek Lake and some of the opportunities up there. We talked about the walleyes a little bit. We talked about smallmouth a little bit. We talked about perch a little bit. We talked about those big bluegills a little bit. But a couple of years ago, I got to fish with Matt, and we fished for northern pike. And I know your favorite fish in the whole lake is a chain pickerel.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just like everybody else that fishes up there.
Yeah.
Hey, but it's a jerk on one end of the line waiting for a jerk on the other. So, you know, you can't discount them too much. A lot of families catch nothing but chain pickerel, and that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. It's a recreational opportunity, that's for sure. So, but let's talk about your, you mentioned it earlier, but it's your favorite. I know it's your favorite, but I want to ask you about how many of the northern pike have gotten tagged, how many have been caught and reported back to you. And I want to talk about northern pike fishing, okay, if that's okay with you.
Well, if you twist my arm.
All right, I figured. Look, it's a specialized fishery, and not everybody can do it. And there are some folks that are focusing on it up there. But, Matt, before you ever thought about, you know, setting your sights on northern pike and Deep Creek Lake, these guys were focusing on those big toothy fish. And right down the road there at Yockagany Dam, and there were guys catching big muskies and everything else out of there. So there are some people that have some history with those big toothy critters in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But you have focused on the northern pike. You've actually encouraged and inspired the fishery service to come up with a survey or a tagging program to kind of see where we are with the northern pike. I mean, we're kind of at the southern end of their range, are we not?
That is correct. We're actually just outside of the accepted range map. So
that's why we don't want to tell anybody about them.
No, not so much.
Oh, all right.
More highlighting why it's such a unique fishery.
Okay. So how many, I mean, we caught a handful. What did we catch that night, couple nights? I think we caught maybe four or five that were tagged during our time together.
I believe.
And I think one of the fish that were caught in that evening was caught like a few months later during through the ice or something like that, and was actually taken out of the lake and taken home. But where are you on the survey, and what, you know, these, the fish that you've caught and released and have tagged have done nothing but eat more shiners and gotten fatter and bigger and longer and stronger, I'm guessing.
That's the theory. Since we fished the other year, Alan, it's been things have picked up in pace a little bit, if
okay.
you will.
Good.
We started doing some directed northern pike surveys on the lake, where we do a fall and spring electrofishing survey aimed directly at collecting northern pike, trying to learn more about their maximum size, their growth rates, their age at different lengths, and at the same time we've continued to tag fish.
Right.
And at this point we're up to we have 60 fish tagged in the lake right now total.
Right.
And that's not including a few that I'm sure have died from natural causes, a couple of them that were harvested, things like that.
Okay. So how many tags have been recovered?
To date, we have 6 of them that have been recovered.
6 out of 60.
And representing about 10% of the tagged fish have been caught again.
Right.
And of those, 2 of them have been harvested, the other 4 released.
Right.
And it's been it's a pretty small sample size, to be honest. But mm-hmm. when you're talking about an apex predator and a low density kind of fishery like this,
right?
1 year or 2 years worth of data is usually not enough to draw any real conclusions from. But we got our feet on the ground and we're running right now, and we're starting to collect the data that we need.
That's good.
Yep.
That's good. And you'll be collecting more this fall?
Absolutely, especially when I get my new boat.
Yeah,
I'm hoping to be putting lots of new tags in fish. But we'll leave that for a discussion with my better half.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Of course.
With that...
Hey, anybody has a boat up there at Deep Creek Lake that Matt can use to go out and do some Northern Pike samples? Just let us know where you hide the key.
My phone may start ringing, but I would be surprised.
Yeah, I'm sure. You never know. We got some pretty good listeners out here, but just tell them it's for research.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
Yep.
Of course, then I'd have to give up all my secrets, you know, Alan.
Oh, they wouldn't have to go with you, would they?
If they're just lending me the boat, then yeah, cool. Let's set something up.
Let's see if that scenario works out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure that's going to. Yeah. That's definitely not going to have my phone ringing off the hook.
Starving fisheries biologist needs research project to. keep his job.
We need
a boat.
I need a boat.
I need a boat.
Not to keep my job, but to keep my sanity more than anything,
yeah,
I believe.
Exactly. Right. So that's pretty funny. So we'll, it does sound, I mean, I can't remember. I think we were in the 15, 16, 17 range when I was up there a couple years ago. So you're now up to number 60, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that you've been the one primarily tagging those and maybe a couple of the other biologists. Have they done any electrofishing studies on the Northerns up there?
Yeah, like I said, we started there last fall and did a fall electrofishing survey for adult fish.
Okay.
Then we did a young year index survey, which targeted young year habitat.
Right.
And then on top of all that, we did a spring survey this past spring, not long after ice out, and tried to collect fish on or near their spawning grounds so that we could get more. Get more of a sample size as well as be able to determine some sex-specific kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that at this point, males and females have very different growth rates.
Right.
And very different maximum sizes.
I'm guessing the females get bigger and grow faster.
In general, yes, that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Got it.
So we've done a lot of work in the way of electrofishing,
mm-hmm.
and at this point, because of my lack of a boat in recent months,
mm-hmm.
it's been hard for me to tag many via hook and line,
mm-hmm.
but I have a breakdown here somewhere, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I would say maybe two-thirds were collected hook and line, and the others were done or collected during our electrofishing survey.
Have you done any forage surveys on them? I know you're primary goal is to tag them and get them back in the water as soon as possible, but have any of them paid the ultimate price to find out what they're eating?
No. And we don't necessarily need to kill the fish to determine what they're eating. You can do a stomach pump kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, because we're so early on in the investigation of this fishery, that the primary thing is we want to be able to get some of the basic life history information about them. And that includes things like taking scales for aging, as well as pelvic fin rays for aging, so that we can assign an age at length, maximum age, maximum length, mortality rates, and things like that. So that's kind of the focus at this point.
Right.
However, you know, we've also dove well into the literature and looked at what other people have done as far as dietary analysis and all. And generally, the general preference for isosids being, you know, primarily pike and muskies, are, you know, longer cylindrical kind of fish that are soft rayed, not spiny rayed fish. Not to say they aren't opportunistic and would occasionally eat a walleye or eat a smallmouth bass, but things like suckers or pickerel or other, you know, trout, as the case may be.
Golden shiners.
Mm-hmm. Things like that are going to be a lot more palatable.
Sure.
Yeah, it's think of it this way. Do you want a nice big juicy steak, or do you want a nice big juicy steak with a little barbed wire stuck on the side of it?
Yeah, I get that. I've seen some really wild stuff. My dad caught a 28-inch chain pickerel out of a pond in southern New Jersey one time, and we kept it to eat, which we did back in the day. And when he cut it open, there was a 14-inch pickerel inside.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're cannibalistic to some degree, but, that's, and what we used, not only wild shiners, but back when I was fishing in Lake Prince Galitzin State Park, up in Pennsylvania, up in Blair County, Pennsylvania. Blair or whatever.
I believe that's Blair County.
Blair or Cambria, up in that border there somewhere.
Yeah.
They had the muskies. They had the not only had the northern pike, they had the muskies, they had the tiger muskies, and then they introduced the Russian Amur pike in there. And they had all kinds of crossbreeds in there. So you never knew what you were going to catch, you know, during that time. But we would always try to go to our local bait dealer who was able to supply us with suckers to fish.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always a great bait. And then Lake Somerset also has chain pickerel and muskies, but no northerns up there. So
correct.
You know,
it's odd to find a good northern pike and muskie fishery together,
right?
Because northern pike spawn earlier than
right.
the muskies,
right?
And they spawn in similar habitats typically,
right.
And those little northerns will hatch before the muskies will,
right?
And then as the little baby muskies are coming out, the little northern pike are just chowing down on them. So
that's mean. So.
Yep. So it's odd to have a trophy fishery for both in the same lake.
Very good. Hey, Matt. Yep. Matt.
Yes, sir.
We're done. We've come to the end of the hour. I appreciate it very much that you've been here with me today, and we'll talk to you very shortly, I'm sure, on landline. And thanks again for filling in for our guest today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Anytime, Alan.
All right, buddy. Thanks again.
All right.
Bye, bye.
See you.
There goes Matt. Folks, we're done. Get out, stay out, stay safe, protect yourself.